whether it's an outbound cold call or email, you resonated with some experience that they've had that they are curious about potentially changing. So that's what it's really about, is that it's about understanding that the experience is what matters, and how people go through that experience is what helps them choose whether or not to work with you.
Conquer Local.
It's really a breath of fresh air. Good times.
I help leaders go from anxiety to authority under pressure.
And then let's go and get it.
It's an ecosystem.
The hardest part here is going to be getting me to shut up on this one.
Conquer Local with Vendasta, hosted by Jeff Tomlin.
Welcome to the Conquer Local podcast. Our show features successful sales leaders, marketers, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs who will inspire you with their success stories. Each episode is packed with practical strategies as our guests share their secrets to achieving their dreams. Listen in to learn highlights of their remarkable accomplishments and get tips to revamp, rework, and reimagine your business. Whether you're a business owner, a marketer, or aspiring entrepreneur, the Conquer Local podcast is your ultimate guide to dominating your local market. Tune in now to take your business to the next level. I'm Jeff Tomlin, and on this episode, we're pleased to welcome Richard Harris. Richard has been instrumental in helping founders with go-to-market strategies and teaching sales representatives about earning the right to ask questions, determining which questions to ask and when to ask them, highlighting timing as the primary driver. With over 20 years' experience, he's held various roles ranging from sales development representative to director of sales operations, working with clients such as Zoom, Salesforce, Human Interest, Dusty Robotics, and Gainsight. Richard is also co-founder of Surf and Sales and host on the Surf and Sales podcast. Get ready, Conquerors, for Richard Harris, coming up next on this week's episode of the Conquer Local podcast. Richard Harris, it is a pleasure to have you on the Conquer Local podcast. Thanks for taking some time out of your busy day to join us here. How you doing, man?
I am really good. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and just appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, you know, we focus a lot on sales and sales skills and sales methodologies here on the podcast. And, you know, we do our best to get a lineup of experts in. We're really privileged to have you. It's truly, you know, and I love hearing people's stories and their backgrounds to explain to people, you know, where you got started and how'd you get to where you are. So maybe you could walk us through that journey a little bit, you know, from, you know, a sales associate at the Gap to becoming a renowned sales consultant. What does that journey look like a bit?
Yeah, I'll give you the short version because, you know, you and I are of a, you know, wisdom age, right? as we could say.
I like that description.
I was one of the few people who ever wanted to be in sales in business. Like, you know, a lot of people in sales, it's kind of like a dumpster fire of failed careers for a lot of people, and they sort of fall into it. I was the opposite. In high school, I was like, I needed a part-time job, and Gap seemed pretty cool. And, you know, I got a discount on clothes and then got there. And, you know, this is before, you know, most people don't know this. This is before Gap even sold their own jeans. They sold Levi's back in the day. Those were the only jeans they had. But then I realized, like, oh, you know what, getting out of college, you know, this would be a good managerial job. You know, I got some advice from an uncle that said, look, you know, your first job out of college kind of doesn't matter. He's like, but the Gap is a good place. It's a logo people will always know and remember, you know, even to this day. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, after, you know, in college, my last semester, I decided to go get a job and decided to go do some part-time stuff in college, and then got promoted to managing a Gap Kids store when there were about maybe 12 in the country. So again, you know, I'm dating us in terms of our experience, but moved from there into inside sales, you know, old school selling classified newspaper ads, you know, cold calling and that whole school, and then just sort of slowly progressed through my career, moved around the country a couple of times with that company, and eventually got into the technology space. And about 10 or 11 years ago, I was working for a company called Mashery that did API management, you know, what I call infrastructure of the internet kind of stuff. And they got acquired by Intel and didn't need me. So they hugged me out the door, did a really nice job of that. And all of a sudden people started calling me, and I was like, huh, okay. I guess I got something to say. And so I've been a consultant ever since. I never decided to be a consultant. It was never my desire or life goal to do that. But once I fell into it, I really loved it. So
I love how things just happen like that. And by the way, I don't think that there is a better way that someone can start a sales career than starting out in retail. Like, it is such an invaluable foundation to learn how to talk to people, right?
Yeah. Look, the first sales process I had was called Gap Act. Greet, approach, product knowledge, add on, close, and thank you. You know, that's what they taught you to do. So that's the first sales process I ever learned.
Love it. Hey, one thing I wanted to get to and unpack here is that you talk about redefining the buyer's journey in terms of a seller's journey. And so tell us a little bit about your perspective on that and how that sort of changes things.
Yeah, you know, I so often all of us sort of follow the leader in this advice we get, right? And, you know, I've said buyer's journey, you know, seller's buyer's journey all along. And then I kind of realized that there really is no such thing as a buyer's journey, right? There's really only a buyer's experience through a journey. And that journey is created by sales and marketing, particularly in today's digital age.
Yeah.
Like, even whether it's inbound or outbound, your buyer has had some experience that makes them want to learn more. So therefore, whether it's an outbound cold call or email, you resonated with some experience that they've had that they are curious about potentially changing. So that's what it's really about, is that it's about understanding that the experience is what matters, and how people go through that experience is what helps them choose whether or not to work with you.
Yeah, I like that a lot. You know, on the last conversation I had with my last guest, we were talking about the concept of ROI, and he had some unique perspectives on that. So you have your own thoughts on the ROI discussion. Since that's at the top of one of the things at the top of my head, unpack that a little bit too. Some alternative approaches that you have talking about ROI.
Yeah. So first of all, I call ROI the religion of insanity, okay? Because there's nothing sane about someone asking you about the ROI. They're never, ever going to believe you. Every time I've had someone ask me about ROI, I said, I can give you an ROI, but will you believe it? Like, will you really believe the numbers I give you?
People are skeptical.
And they all kind of
like
chuckle.
Any sales discussion or discussion of the sales, people have a position of skepticism.
Yes. So, and I talk about that too, but back to the ROI piece is that, so I will tell them, you know, look, nobody ever believes the R, they only see the I.
Mm.
So,
right.
And the reason for that is that it's about some future state that nobody can predict, right? It's, you know, January of 2020, someone's asking you for an ROI. Well, guess what happened in April, right? So now all of a sudden, there's the ROI changes, but right? The economy of 2023, I can give you an ROI, right? But it's about some future state, and therefore, people are very skeptical about the future. That's the problem with the ROI at the real level. For me, I encourage people to talk about the economic impact, meaning what's the economic impact it's costing you right now? And I don't necessarily mean just the hard costs of time and efficiency. Efficiency and effectiveness is not enough, right? The real part of economic impact comes down to, well, if you get some of this time back, what does that do for your company's growth? Because that's economic impact, right? And then if you ask questions the right way, they will give you their numbers around economic impact. How many people are affected? How long does it take? How much time would you want back? What could you do with that time? So at the end of it, by the time you get to, you know, your commercial terms, they can't justify that it's not affordable. So that's the goal around economic impact, and why I think that's way more important than ROI. Economic impact is about right now. And if you like right now and you're going to stay with right now, here's what it's going to cost you. So the question then becomes, from an ROI perspective, if you purchase this, are you going to implement? And if so, then it's on you to determine the ROI.
Yeah, I sure like that a lot, because what you're describing is mapping out the cost of staying the same right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's the first step in helping them understand what the risk is in their current position, right? And
yep.
And what the future state could look like after that.
Yes.
You have a lot of experience in enterprise sales, you know, throughout your career. And one thing that I wanted to make sure that we got to in the podcast here was have you talking a little bit about your approach in dealing with procurement. Because it's one thing that we don't talk a lot about is navigating larger enterprise deals. And so, you know, there's mm-hmm. a number of people that have to deal with procurement departments. So you got some perspectives on that. Maybe you could dig into that a bit.
Yeah. So the challenge is that, you know, we get so few at-bats with procurement, and nobody ever teaches us these things unless you've got a really good leader who's been doing it for a long time and understands it. So, you know, I only learned this in the last 3 or 4 years. So, you know, the goal of procurement, yeah, of course they're trying to save some money, as they should. So there's a couple of ways to think about that. First of all, when you go into procurement, they actually, in most cases, want to talk to you sooner than you think. Like, I've talked to people at Coca-Cola and Mercedes, and they've said, I would much rather talk to sales way before the end of the process. Mm-hmm. The challenge is, internally, that company has never told their, you know, internal people who are bringing stuff to procurement to bring them in sooner. Right? Because look, procurement doesn't want to be there at the end of the quarter, at the end of December, any more than you do, right? They want to go home and be with their family. So that's the first thing, is to think about bringing that up, and being able to say, you know, hey, you know, Richard, you know, as we move forward, I've learned over the years that procurement actually wants to talk to us sooner than later. What's your process like? So I'm talking to my champion, Richard, to see what that looks like. And that doesn't mean that I'm asking to be introduced. I'm just asking what their process is, which we actually need to know as salespeople. What is the approval process? When you do, whether it's in the beginning or in the middle or the end, you get to procurement. For me, the first question to ask is to just say, so, you know, as I begin to work with you, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Procurement Agent, you know, I understand we're going to talk about commercial terms. Can you help me understand your role here? Can you help me understand, are we just doing commercial terms? Are you going to shepherd me through this process? Does that include legal too, or is that somebody different? So now all of a sudden I'm doing a different kind of discovery to let the other person know I'm trying not to be adversarial, that I'm trying to respect their role and help them in their role, right? Like, I don't need to like hound them about something. So, you know, that's a really interesting place that I encourage people to think about procurement. I can go a little deeper in terms of like, how do you prevent the discount so much, but I'll pause here and see if that resonated with you, or where you want to take it, or something like that.
No, you know, 100%, you know, even internally here, you know, at Vendasta, we deal with, you know, larger enterprises, as well as smaller customers. And, you know, you have to adopt different process when working through these enterprises. And one of the, you know, super important parts of that is understanding what the, you know, the process is at, mm-hmm. you know, the customers, on the customers end, mm-hmm. to see, you know, there's a lot of different stakeholders, you know, when you're dealing with an enterprise type client. And so you have to understand, you know, hey, what are the things that are making them tick? And I like your approach, mm-hmm. of hey, bringing them in earlier in the discussion, so you don't have this adversarial relationship with the with the department. I'd love to for you to continue a little bit on your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So the thing that there are a couple of things to remember about procurement and legal. Sometimes procurement and legal are two different departments, mm-hmm. and or most cases they probably are. Sometimes procurement will be your shepherd through legal. Sometimes they won't. The first thing to remember is whenever you're dealing with commercial terms, if you've got to talk to someone separate in legal versus someone separate on the pricing, you've got to make sure that any number you agree to for pricing is in conjunction with what your legal terms are, right? Because otherwise it's what I call getting unbundled, meaning legal is going to come back and make these changes. But if you've already negotiated down your price, you've got no leverage.
Yeah.
Right. And so your legal is your, you've got to have that piece. And so, you know, being willing to say things like, this seems okay. I need to I cannot confirm until I hear back from legal on red lines.
Yeah.
Because if there's something you got to give up too much, then there's, you know, there's a challenge there for you. And so you just have to be delicate with that conversation. I don't think it's inappropriate. I don't think, look, believe me, procurement's heard this stuff 1,000 times before. Procurement goes to training about how to negotiate, right?
Yeah.
And they know that they can scare the hell out of us with anything, right? Same with legal, right? So you've got to make sure you don't get unbundled and that you handle the legal terms, MSA, you know, along with the pricing together, even if they try to separate them. That's the first thing. When it comes to discounting, you know, procurement's generally happy with a good 2-4% discount. And the first thing I always say to people when they ask for a discount is to say, you know, well, actually our pricing is based on what the market will bear. And based on our research, the market says this, how would you like to proceed? And sometimes they're like, well, we still need a discount and those kind of things. And if so, if you have to give a discount, I encourage people to say, well, look, there's a few ways we can both leverage commercial terms to get what we want here. You know, if you give me a longer term contract, I can give you 2%. If you buy more seats, I can give you 3%. If you give us a customer quote, I can give you another 3%. And so based on that, you know, you can have all these discounts. Which one are you comfortable with? So now all of a sudden, they have to earn that discount. They can't just get it for nothing.
Yeah.
And what's really important is that I've also prevented myself from just, oh, I'll give out 20% or 30%, because we know they're going to come in with some high anchor of 30%. I'm going to be like, what are you talking about? Like, do you really think my time's worth 70% less now? So I can't say that out loud, but I like to, you know, sort of take that position and then sort of say there's a way we can both leverage it, right? It's a it's a mutual exchange. So the context of the language, I think, matters. So that's what I encourage people to do.
I mean, I like just even the psychology of, hey, you know, asking for something before you give something, right? Hey, if you want this, what is it worth to her? You know, I mean, that's just good psychology, because then you're not undervaluing your time or your product and the value of what you're providing at the end of the day. Hey, let's chat a little bit about the book. You've got a book out, the Seller's Journey. Maybe you can share a little bit about some of the insights that you're that you have in the book and what people can expect.
Thank you. I'm always conscious about like over promoting a book. So if I seem reserved, just know that's my, I'm trying to be respectful about it.
Oh, that sounds, sounds Canadian.
I am from the deep south of, you know, in Macon, Georgia. So maybe it's a little Southern hospitality in me. That being said, so the book's kind of in two parts. You know, one part is about the mindset of sales. And, you know, there's a chapter in there called Yes, I'm in Sales. And, you know, so often you'll go to some event and people will be like, oh, I'm a doctor and I'm a lawyer and I'm this and I'm that. And they're like, what are you doing? And we're like, oh, I'm in sales. Right. And it's kind of like, we should be proud about this. No profession changes more lives than what we do. Careers can be made by what our customers buy. They can get promoted. They can get extra money. They can take care of their family. You know, that doesn't put down a lawyer or a doctor for what they do. They can change people's lives as well. At a quantity level and a quality level, we surpass them, and we should be proud of that. There's no reason. Not to mention,
Amen.
Guess what a lawyer's job is? Sell. Guess what a doctor's job is? Sell. There's not a doctor in the world who isn't getting measured by how much they're billing at the hospital. Trust me. Right. Now, that doesn't mean they're bad doctors, hopefully, or bad lawyers. But we're in sales just like they are. And they just don't like it because it's a dirty word. Meanwhile, we get it. So that's so a big part of the book is about being proud and understanding mindset and sales mindset. And then the other part of the book is there are 13 tactics of what you can put in your sales playbook. This discounting conversation is in there. Understanding a strong sales process is in there and how to write one. Understanding the right kinds of questions. There's a whole section around how do you bucket your questions around, you know, getting access to authority or what is the economic impact and how do you get there? So there's a bunch of examples in there. So it's you know, mentally strategic and then, you know, heavily tactical from the execution side.
Yeah, love it. If you had a couple of takeaways that you want to leave people with on today's chat, what would they be?
Well, aside from, you know, yeah, please go buy the book.
Go buy the book.
You know, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of, you know, this mental part of the game. Like sales is not easy, right? There are few professions that are where literally your livelihood's on the line every month or every quarter or every year. And so I want people to know that I get that. And that's a part of what's in the book. But I want people to walk away kind of knowing this mental health side of sales is also equally important. Doesn't get talked about enough. I want people to know that there is support out there that, you know, if your company is not educating you in helping your career grow, and you could say this about marketing or IT, whatever it is, right? Go do it on your own. I don't care if it's my book, someone else's book, a blog, a website, you know, a podcast, obviously, like Conquer Local. Like, take accountability for yourself and find little ways to just improve and to learn. So that's the one thing. And then the last thing I'll say is that, you know, in sales, we are meant to be the instigators of change for our prospects and customers.
Of that.
To their own benefit, not just to our financial benefit. Yet salespeople are some of the hardest people to change their own bad habits. Like we're terrible at it, right?
Agree.
Like, you know, we don't take our own advice. And so if you ever feel like you're in that spot, that kind of goes back to this, take some accountability and go learn something. That's what I want people to walk away from is like, you know, we can all get better at this. I'm not perfect at it. You're not perfect at it. We all learn. You know, so take what you can get.
I love the concept of the instigators of change. I'm going to hold on to that one. Hey, and with that, by the way, if people wanted to get a hold of you and continue the conversation, how do they reach out?
Yeah, this is the crazy part. So my real cell phone number is 415-596-9149, 415-596-9149. I give it out on everything I do. Nobody ever calls me. Like it's the craziest thing. Text me ahead of time to say, hey, I heard you on Conquer Local, but people rarely ever reach out. You can also find me on LinkedIn. You know, I'm Richard Harris have a little goofy trademark emoji by my name. Yes, I know you can't trademark your name, but that's probably the easiest way. Or the Harris Consulting Group is my website.
Hey, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the Conquer Local podcast. I want to say a quick thank you for taking time out of your very busy day to join us here. And I wish you all the best of luck and I encourage people to reach out and contact you and definitely take a look at the book. Some amazing insights inside of it. Richard Harris, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun.
Hey, what a great chat with Richard. So what are some of the takeaways here? The first one is to focus on the buyer's experience. You know, forget the buyer's journey. It's all about creating a positive experience throughout the sales process. Whether it's a cold call or an email, resonate with the buyer's current situation and their potential desire for change. Focus on the experience to build trust and move the deal forward. The second takeaway is move beyond ROI. While return on investment is a great metric, Richard argues that it can be unreliable because the future is unpredictable. Instead, emphasize the economic impact of your product or service on the customer's business. Show how it will save them money, free up time for growth, or contribute to their overall success. I think that's a super important nuance. If you've enjoyed Richard's episode discussing the seller's journey, keep the conversation going and revisit some of the older episodes from the archives.
Check out episode 707, Exposing Strategies to 10X Your Sales Growth with Joe Ingram, or episode 701, The Sales Doctor's Prescription for $100 Million Success with Chet Lovgren. Until next time, I'm Jeff Tomlin. Get out there and be awesome.
You've been listening to the Conquer Local podcast presented by Vendasta. Tune in next week for a new episode. Guest discovery and produced by Suleiman Adam. Marketing by Rory Lawford, Brandon Moore, and Suleiman Adam. Executive producers Brendan King, Jeff Tomlin, and Suleiman Adam. Recorded at Vendasta headquarters on the Canadian prairies.